Support for this program is brought to you by Seagate. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. It's Friday, July 4th, 2003, 10:04 on the Central Coast of California. Time for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. This morning on Geek Speak, we're doing the news, then a preview of the yet-to-be-released Mac OS 10.3, codenamed Panther. During the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. During the second half of the show, we'll be opening the calls to any comments or questions about technology. I'll be giving out those numbers again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and Dee Dee Hubbard. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Morning, Lyle.
Good morning, Lyle.
Happy 4th of July.
We'll start a discussion about Panther, Mac's new operating system, in just a moment. First, the news.
That's me.
It is. Sean.
Hewlett-Packard said this week that they're only going to service or allow their computers to be serviced at only 40, with only 40 partners out of the 1,000 that used to be available to consumers. So basically what they've done is they've only authorized certain service providers, such as Best Buy, Costco, CompUSA, Circuit City, Fry's, those places who actually sell HP computers as authorized service repair.
So if you take it to a different service repair center, you'd void the warranty?
I think so, pretty much. It's not going to be covered by HP's.
Do we know why they're doing this, why HP's doing this?
They pretty much said that they're doing this to deauthorize all service providers that do not sell HP consumer products. So I guess it's...
So you're trying to force people to sell HP consumer.
I guess
now,
so.
Is HP consumer also compact now? I mean, is that the same thing? I'd assume that the deal would include both of them since they're kind of joined now.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. All right, well, thank you very much.
Most everything's HP. Some of the products are compact still, just by name.
Dee Dee Hubbard?
I have some news about a new high-def digital video spec.
And what's high-def?
High definition is high resolution, pretty colors, and nice digital spec. So
for video?
For video. So this is a consortium of Sony, Sharp, Canon, and Victor. They're putting out a new high-def spec, which will allow you to write to DV tape, and includes 720 progressive and 1080 interlaced protocols. So
what the heck does that mean?
Well, 720 progressive means that you can get a resolution of about 1080 by 720.
Okay.
And interlaced 1080 means that you can get about 144 by 1080.
And so they have this new spec for recording. What kind of medium are they going to be using?
Well, this is for like DV tape, so cameras and things like that.
So but it'll fit on DVs.
Yeah.
Nice.
We should say that progressive is a much better way to watch movies because you're actually the whole screen is being refreshed at once, whereas interlaced is only every other line.
Is that why when I take my home movies off my current camera, burn a DVD of them and play that DVD, I get those stripes if I pause the image?
Exactly.
Now, is that a playback feature or is that a record and a playback feature?
It's pretty much a playback feature.
Interesting.
Because on your camera is recording in progressive. The playback on a television, if you get too close to a television, you notice the lines. That's interlaced.
Right.
So only half the information is actually being sent to the television, and it's putting another line in between every other line. You can't see it because you're pretty far away and things are happening so fast.
Didi, you're our film expert or video expert. Do most camcorders, do they have an ability to record on interlaced and non-interlaced, or are they always one way?
It's about how the a lot of it has to do with how you get that information off of your camera. So that information may be on your DV tape, and if you can play it back in that format, then
you're
you
okay.
Then you get the pretty extra lines.
Okay, and then of course the playback as well.
Now 1080i is the most beautiful way to watch HGTV movies. I mean, it's huge. It looks great. It's still interlaced, but it is at a much higher frame rate, so you don't see it. Whereas 720p is progressive. Actually is a better picture, but they compromise frame rate, I believe.
And that's for the playback side?
Yeah.
Hi, Miles.
Hiya.
How's it going?
All right.
What do you got for us today?
Gateway's announcing a new, quote, connected DVD player. It's a DVD player that plays MP3 files, video CD files, but in addition
to... And it knows people in Hollywood. No, I'm sorry.
But DVD players have done this in the past. What they're adding is Ethernet connection and wireless to it, Wi-Fi, so that you can connect to another computer in your house or your home, for example, and play the MP3s off of that through your home stereo, through this DVD player.
So it's kind of an all-in-one. Now, what kind of...
Yeah, everybody's offering that. Even with TiVo, you can get the new home network package that allows you to play MP3s.
It's starting to become ubiquitous.
I want to see something that plays MPEG and... an AVI video.
Well, it also depends upon the price, too. This is about the price of a mid-range DVD player.
Right, right.
As opposed to TiVo, which is a bit more pricey.
Didi, you have some specs on what it does play when we're talking about?
This new Gateway plays CDs, music CDs, DVDs, of course, video CDs, S-video CDs, MP3 formats, Windows Media files, and can read JPEG files. But an even geekier kind of super connected DVD player would be Sigma Design's EM8550 Progressive DVD player. It allows support for DivX and
all those file formats you just mentioned, and DivX.
Right, nice. And also Ogg Vorbis for
Miles.
Nice.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay, so we're seeing a lot of and this is a consumer product.
Right, it's a standalone DVD player.
So. Gateway. I mean, sorry. So you just mentioned who's releasing that one?
Gateway.
And then
this is Sigma Design.
Oh, so I knew a lot of people at Sigma Designs. I'm gonna have to go through my
see we
my
get
business
one of those
cards, yeah.
to play with. That'd be great.
So we should write it for the website. Microsoft is offering free ebook downloads for a 20-week period to try and, I guess, give a kick in the butt to that standard, because nobody seems to want to read their books on a computer. So you, for a five-month period promotion, you can go to Microsoft's website and via Pocket PC, Tablet PC, Laptop, Desktop, whatever. And you can download things like A Short History of Nearly Everything by Bill Bryson, The Joy Luck Club by Amy Tan.
Now, I'm assuming that these books that they have, a collection of books that they have in e-form, they've gotten approval from
the authors and
the publishers.
Probably what Microsoft has done is just paid a lump sum to each of these authors and to try and get this going.
Interesting. Now, so you said you mean Adobe?
No, Microsoft. Microsoft is doing this. So you go to
Microsoft's
website, you can get more information on this. I guess they really want to try and push Pocket PC, you know, handhelds, PDAs, the ability to use Microsoft e-reader.
Does anyone here read books on a computer device?
All the time.
Well, technical e-books when I'm doing something.
And Miles?
Yeah, I read some specs, but reading a there's something to be said for getting a little paperback.
Okay, but Sean,
the problem
you
is
actually read novels.
Yeah,
right?
it's hard to find e-books.
Well, you just go to Microsoft. So
I think I'm going to.
Do you read a lot on your handheld, like novels?
I wanted to give it a try, so I did. I put the Harry Potter book on there, not the new one, but this is one of the first ones. And I read it. It's great. I can actually read faster on a PDA.
Why
for
that?
Some reason.
More contrast?
I guess more contrast. The text is larger. I can. You just get into this zone where you're just hitting page down, and you're reading through it before you know
it.
And
you're what do you read it on?
I read it on HP Giornata, which is the predecessor of the iPac.
Laptops are starting to outpace desktop revenue.
In the revenue field. We were talking about sales a while ago, that more sales, but they're definitely making...
Sales are up, but desktops are still selling more units.
Okay. But they're making, but laptops are more expensive, and therefore they're making more money.
But they're not quite as expensive as they used to be.
That's true.
In console front, the Xbox
Microsoft's a gaming console.
Right. A group of programmers has hacked the Xbox, and a common thing, just as some background information, is people have done what's called modding an Xbox. They'll take a replacement ROM chip, put it into the Xbox.
Crack open the entire case, unsolder stuff, solder things back
right,
in.
Right, or replace the chip and then put some solder in. Yeah.
Well, the reason they do that is so they can copy a game, an Xbox game, and
well,
play that
not,
copy.
Not just that.
Not so much.
The
I mean, biggest that is true.
That is the biggest reason. Yeah, but exactly. A lot of people do, a small people, group of people do it too.
That was the big reason behind the PlayStation. But Xbox has a big following with regards to Media Center, actually being able to play you could already play DVDs, but playing different media files, AVI files, MPEG files, MP3 files, and the like off of your system.
Like these connected DVD players we just mentioned a little while ago.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what this group has done, an Austrian-based group, has they've made a exploit that can work on an Xbox without having to open the case up, without having to do any solder, they're getting into a bit of a tussle with Microsoft over, you know, whether that's allowed or not.
Wasn't there some like $1 million prize for the first person, $100,000 prize for the first person that came up with a workaround for Xbox?
I don't remember the exact amount. I think
actually,
it was closer to 20,000. But
yeah. What's happened is these guys have approached Microsoft and pretty much tried to blackmail them. They've told Microsoft to release a signed Linux bootloader for the Xbox, which would allow you to install Linux. Or they will release an open source a workaround, an exploit that they found.
Now, but there was a release today from a body of people
Let me continue.
Please go.
So they told Microsoft if you don't release this signed bootloader, and what they are saying is Microsoft, if they by releasing a signed bootloader can patch a hole that would allow hackers to come in and actually play pirated games. If Microsoft doesn't do this, and the group can go ahead and just release this code, which will then do the same thing, allow people to install Linux on the Xbox, but then hackers will have a chance to play pirated games. So they told Microsoft, you know, we're not going to release this until you if you come forward with a signed Linux bootloader. Microsoft didn't do it, and the group today, well, here's what they said. The existence of an exploitable vulnerability within the dashboard, which is the version of Xbox. When you don't have a disk in the Xbox, you see the dashboard. Through the dashboard is where you can adjust your system settings, play save games, that kind of stuff. That's where the vulnerability exists, is in that dashboard. So what they've said is this vulnerability totally compromises the Xbox security system, and it will make the Xbox independent from Microsoft signed code, and therefore this information is being released today, the 4th of July 2003, and they're calling it the Day of Xbox Independence. So they've actually already released the code.
I love it.
Yeah, this does bring up an interesting point, though, with regards to if someone's pirating games, I can totally see the issue there because you have copyright violation, you're copying somebody else's work. However, if you're using it for a media center, then I'm hard-pressed to find where someone is actually losing money, where it's
right.
Compromising that. I liken it to if someone bought a lawnmower and but the lawnmower company said, okay, you can buy the lawnmower, but you can't take it apart to find out how it works.
Right.
It comes a question of, do you own the Xbox? You paid, you know, X amount of dollars for this Xbox, and you want to be able to do stuff with it, assuming you're not, you know, illegally copying games.
Well, that's the thing. The issue is the ability to illegally copy games.
No, actually, the big issue, what people are most wanting to do with an Xbox is use it as a media player, as this media device.
But the reason they approached Microsoft is because their workaround, their way to install Linux, leaves the door wide open for people to play pirated games.
That's right, and that's why they said...
That's why they approached Microsoft and said, hey...
And Microsoft didn't jump on the ball.
Microsoft didn't jump on the ball, so they did it.
Now, we kept on talking about signed stuff for Microsoft. Miles, can you tell me why signed software can run on Xbox, and what does that mean?
It makes a unique key, basically. I don't follow it very closely, but if memory serves, there's a key on the Xbox, a private key, basically, that no one can see. And you, on your game, you sign your game with a particular key that's been given by Microsoft. And basically...
So game manufacturers have a relationship with Microsoft. They give them some private information. They take their game and they encode it with that private information, and then they put it on the Xbox and it runs. And if you take a game that doesn't have that private signature, it won't run on the Xbox.
Right. The Xbox
and this
will
is
go
one
like,
of,
I can't guarantee that you're allowed to do this. You can't play.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Other news bits from me? Dee Dee Hubbard.
I was going to mention a new micro drive. It's kind of a micro drive compact flash card, about 2.4 gigabytes worth of compact flash.
Goodness. And the size of a pack of matches, basically.
Yeah, and so you can use... It's got a little 2.4 gig drive, which runs at...
Hard drive, actually, inside
it. Yeah, inside a little compact drive. It runs 4,200 RPM and has a data transfer rate from 3.6 megabytes to 7.1 megabytes per second. And it should be coming out soon. Prices aren't quite finalized.
Whose is it?
Colby Systems Corp. And the technology will be used by Hitachi by the end of by a fourth quarter release to release a 4 gigabyte version.
Okay, so if I've got a camera like the new high end 6.5 megapixel camera, how many like uncompressed images can I hold on that card?
Well, with that really high standard, you can compress 70 uncompressed photos.
Wow, so you can hold 70 uncompressed. Okay, what about for like normal run-of-the-mill people's cameras?
At about 3.3 megapixels, which is pretty common now, you can have over 225 uncompressed images. That's uncompressed.
On one card. Nice, on one hard drive, which of course will eventually fail, because all hard drives do, which is kind of scary, but that's great. Really, it'll be a boon for people with high-end cameras, and it'll probably produce a lot more, it'll help people produce a lot more images for the smaller. And of course, since that's a Flash 2 card, you could stick that in an MP3 player and things of that nature, which is kind of exciting.
Yeah, Adobe is testing an anti-piracy piracy technique in Australia. They have been testing it, and it's been very successful, and they're going to roll it out in the United States. So basically, it's online activation.
Okay, well, describe the test. What software package do they use?
They don't say. I think it's pretty much their own developed.
No, but what software do they protect?
But they've tested this with Photoshop 7, okay. Which they... they have, hard statistics have shown, and they believe that there's about 39% of commercial software, you know, is pirated, and they know that Photoshop is one of the leading pieces of software.
Mm-hmm.
They started testing it in Australia and found that it has been very successful. Basically, from what I understand, there's a serial number that's checked against the database. That's separate from the database for the application.
This is akin to what Microsoft did with XP and what they've done with the new Office.
So the serial number needs to be deemed legitimate, sent back, and, you know, they'll unlock your software and you can use it.
Okay.
So basically, the software you purchase won't be usable until you've had it unlocked.
Okay. And theoretically, you'd have the information to unlock it. You registered, basically. Miles, got any issues on this from a privacy side? Don't know much about the case?
Don't know much about the case. I want to comment on it.
Okay. Great.
And then lastly for me, Microsoft has released Service Pack 4 for Windows 2000, and they've also released several fixes to Service Pack 4 for 2000.
Already?
Seven of them already in the last week.
Service Pack with Service Packs.
It's just amazing.
Okay. Now, Service Pack, what's the basic concept behind a Service Pack? What's it for?
A Service Pack basically it includes all of the bug fixes of previous service packs and anything up to that point. So,
and you actually have to run it yourself. You have to tell.
If you're going to if you're worried about not having service packs 1, 2, 3, you don't need to worry about that. Go download 4, and that, you know, it comprises everything before it.
But I guess they missed some stuff, and they're finding it.
They missed about, I guess, 59.
So far. Only 59
have to
so far.
Fixed 59 bugs. But you can get more information at w2knews.com. w2knews.com.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Geeks, for the news. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The Geeks this morning, Miles, Dee Dee, and Sean. The topic for today, well, it's basically Macintosh's new operating system, which hasn't been released yet. Last week we talked about the G5. We didn't get to talk about Panther, the new operating system, Mac OS 10.3. We're going to talk about that a little bit, and we're going to open up calls for any questions or comments. So you can take the phone numbers now if you'd like, 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'll be giving those numbers out again in a second.
Or you can shoot us an email at geeks@geekspeak.org.
Dee Dee, you got a chance yesterday to play with the new unreleased OS 10.3 operating system.
It's not completely unreleased. They released it to developers at their WWDC conference.
Everybody, all the developers that were there got copies of it?
Right.
You weren't there. How do you have a copy of it?
I would rather not say.
Okay, that's fine.
I am a student developer with that Apple's developer connection, though.
Okay. So you take a look at this, installed it in a FireWire drive, because this operating system is not going to exist forever. It actually
has a kill switch that goes off in about 5 months, so its days are numbered, this developer preview, and it's not actually upgradable to what the final version of Panther will be, and so.
So it's kind of a test environment.
It's just to test your software and your hardware. So that's why they released it to developers.
Okay, so what is it? What's it got? What does it offer?
Well, it offers a rewritten Finder, which I know a lot of people out there will be cheering for. Finder puts you at the center of your Mac with iTunes-like navigation, they say. But really, it's more like Windows XP or Windows 2000 navigation.
So there's like files on the left-hand side?
Right, which unlike XP, you can adjust and add your own or customize it to your liking.
So it's kind of like the toolbar that's across the top. Is the toolbar across the top in OS X gone?
It's gone. It's now on the left side, which is a lot easier on a navigational basis because you can sort of set your start point of where you want to navigate through your computer, and it guides you through to the right if you're using column view.
So it's kind of like the column view thing, except the toolbar is now instead of the top, kind of swung off to the left. Get that. All right.
It's like a better visual model for people who are new to computers.
All right. And now there's also a new. Well, first off, the Finder now is that metal, brushed metal look, which I currently don't like. What do you
a
feel
lot
about
of people
it?
Don't like brushed metal, but they've also done some other slight GUI tricks to make it a little bit easier on your eyes and also to figure out where you are and to help you locate what functionality you need. The menus, the most active menu will now have sort of a faded gray look. They've gotten rid of some, they subdued the pinstripes in the background, but they've also gotten rid of them on the front active window. So you can sort of pick out what you're looking at from your landscape of windows a lot easier. And menus now have menu separators, so you can separate functions a lot easier. So they've done a lot of work on the UI, but a lot of people are really talking about the brush metal Finder. But I think you'll get used to it.
Okay. And I'm sure someone will come up with a workaround. I mean, all of their styling is done via PDF documents.
So far, the Finder is not the simple demetalphilizer trick that you could do before.
Okay. A couple features that I liked when I was hovering over your shoulder looking at this was I'm a big user of multiple windows. As is, I think, Sean, you've always got lots of windows open.
Oh, yeah.
All of us pretty much always have lots of windows open. And one of the things that recently got helped in the computing arena with multiple windows is that a lot of browsers now are supporting tabs, which you have multiple windows, but they're all in sun cut on one frame, and you can tab between them.
Well, Mozilla supports that.
Mozilla
IE does not.
That. Yeah.
And why don't use IE? That's
Safari.
The one feature.
Oh, really? You like that feature?
I love tabs.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's Safari supports that as well. And then other applications are starting to take it in, like Miles's game client, the client that he uses for chatting, has tabs, which I envy because I can't find one that currently works for me or haven't spent the time enough. But one other feature that Mac is doing in that same kind of arena of managing multiple windows is they've got this kind of shrink windows and let me see them so I can pick them feature.
Expose.
Can you explain that to me? Expose.
Expose, besides being a really cool visual trick, allows you to kind of take a look, overview of all of your windows that are open at the same time. So on a single monitor, all of your windows will shrink down to size, and you can hover over them with your mouse to check out what window is underneath there, and you can select which window you'd like to bring to the front. And you can do this for all the windows that are open or just the windows that are open for a particular application.
So imagine you have all these windows that are kind of stacked on top of each other and you can't really navigate. This is really mentioned in the operating system now that has lots of windows. And of course, on the Windows environment, Microsoft Windows environment, there's a tab across the bottom. You can click your windows there. But you don't necessarily know what's in the window itself, what's the body of the window. You just have a kind of a title. And in a Macintosh environment, same thing. You actually don't have a way to switch between multiple windows in the same application. It's not a standard GUI interface thing. You actually have to go to the window menu item, and again, it tells you titles. So their new concept here, if I can describe it again, even though you did a good job of it, it takes all the windows that are currently laid out all on top of each other and shrinks them down small enough so you can see them all. And they kind of are shrunken down. And then you can hover over them, and when you let go of the button that's doing that, you actually selected that window.
Right.
Great feature.
These shrunken windows, how detailed are they?
It's still, they still update, and so like if you have a movie playing QuickTime or DVD player, the movie will still be updating. It's just
it's detailed. It's pretty cool. DVD opened a whole bunch of web pages with a whole bunch of text, and I could definitely, you know, it couldn't read the text because it was so small, mm-hmm. but I could definitely see the format of the page, and I could see the images pretty well, and I could tell the text was there.
That's cool.
So doing this in a visual way is really helpful to new users as well as people who, the graphic professionals who are always working on pictures and might have untitled 1 through 20.
And you can do that with just the application you're currently in, or you can do that across the entire machine.
And there's also a shortcut for showing just clearing the desktop of all windows entirely. And this can be assigned to keyboard keys or to your mouse or to corners of your screen, so you can do mouse gestures.
What's mouse gestures?
If I move the mouse, the cursor, into the upper right corner, I could have it show desktop.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I did it to the lower left corner, I could have it shrink all of the windows for a particular application.
But this is specific to the Finder. You can set these things up in the
right.
Finder, and they work across all the applications.
Right.
Okay, and then the shortcut keys, of course, which people are familiar with, which is kind of nice because there are a few features that you do a lot, and to assign a simple key to that is quite nice.
I like the mouse gesture.
You like
him? Here comes the boss. You sweep the mouse up to the corner.
That's right. You'd use that all the time. Oh, we won't talk about who I was talking to.
I'm in an office, so it doesn't matter.
Okay. All right. Well, that's great. Thank you, Dee Dee, for taking a look at that. Is there any other features that you thought were just really cool?
Well, there's built-in faxing.
Oh, my goodness.
Which Windows...
What was that, Sean?
I couldn't help it.
Windows has had it for a long time, but it finally comes in the Mac on built-in.
How about labels? We have actually had calls from people going, okay, OS X has no labels. I want them back.
Oh, yeah, labels are back.
Now, what are labels?
Labels allow you to say, I'd like red to mean work, green to mean school, and blue to mean my personal stuff. And then you can go by and label your documents and your folders, and they will say, okay, this folder holds all of my personal stuff. I'll make it blue.
And so the text, will be a certain color.
And you can get that for only $120?
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about why are they having it paid for?
They figure that there are so many new features in this new incarnation of OS X that it is worthy of a paid update.
How do you feel?
I felt kind of shaky about upgrading to Jaguar. But then I didn't actually have to pay $129 for that, so I didn't feel so bad. But now that I will actually have to pay $129 for Panther, I'm actually really excited about Panther, and it's gonna hurt in September.
And you're gonna buy it. You're gonna buy it, aren't you?
I might just update my student developer status, and they give you free copy.
I don't know.
DD gets sucked in.
I'm trying to understand this. Okay, so there's already been one paid update for OS X.
Yeah.
This is the second paid update.
Yeah.
When you get the update, are you actually buying a whole new version?
You get a new CD.
So you actually have to reinstall?
You can upgrade.
Yeah. System upgrades with Macs are a lot easier than they are with PCs.
They're pretty easy. It's akin to running a service patch, if you will. Oh. But it's not. They're not doing it.
But
they're not doing the security features. If you buy it at a store, yeah. You can also buy it online, can't you?
But just they'll always send you a CD.
They'll always send you a CD, yeah. So yeah, I think you can buy it. They'll send you a CD, and during that time, you can download the image if you've got enough bandwidth.
Do they send a masseuse to help your back while you're upgrading?
So. But it's pretty seamless to upgrade operating system. Dee Dee?
Very quickly, there's a couple more things. There's fast user switching, which they also borrowed from Windows XP.
So now you don't actually have to log a user out to switch users.
Right, and it does this really nice kind of weird animation where it
flips the page.
It flips the page on your screen.
How geeky is that? Go on.
And for security's sake, they've added File Vault, which allows you to secure your home folder with encryption AES 128, so 128-bit encryption. So with a press of a button, it will encrypt your home directory so that anything coming in or out of it is decrypted and encrypted on the fly.
As you're logged in.
Yeah.
And then when you log out, a different user logs in.
Because people are concerned about losing their laptops and having all their information exposed.
Okay. So that means that even if I'm a super user on the machine, I go in that directory, I can't read the files because they're all encrypted.
Right.
Kind of creepy. Miles, what do you feel about that? Process intensive, but...
Yeah.
It seems like a good feature, if it's especially on a shared machine. Anything else, Didi?
There's a couple of nods to Unix. There's a built-in. They've updated to FreeBSD 5 underneath, and they have improved NFS and UFS support, and they finally have a final version of the X11 Windows Server, which now allows you to do full screen. You used to have to download a ported version of X386 to do that. And they also have support for popular Linux APIs and IPv version 6.
So, what does that mean?
It means that Miles would probably like it better.
What's it mean, Miles? IPv6?
Well, first off, if it weren't for Apple, BSD would be slipping faster than it already is. But that was my little jab. IP version 6 means that you can have a wider address space for networking. Right now, we're running out of IP addresses. Put IP version 6 in there. We may run out of addresses when we, colonize the 100th planet.
Okay, so it's a lot of IP addresses.
FreeBSD 5 adds in a lot of speed increases. Like their network stack is a bit better.
Okay. Well, Didi, thank you very much for taking a look at macOS 10.3 Panther, and I look forward to it getting released. My job will actually pay for it, so I won't have to, which is kind of nice. Thank you very much for talking about the macOS 10. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services, including DSL and spam filters, for home and office throughout Santa Cruz County. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. You are listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and Didi Hubbard. The phone numbers to join our discussion or call in about any technical information: 476-2800, or toll free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can email us geeks@geekspeak.org. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. My name is Lyle Troxell. You are listening to Geek Speak with geeks Miles, Sean, and Didi. If you have questions or comments about Mac or other computers, any computers, any questions, the numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. The email address is geeks@geekspeak.org. Geeks, hi.
How's it going, Lyle?
Lyle.
How's it going, guys? And
all right.
Didi?
Sorry.
Yes? Didi, next week is your last show. You're taking off, and I'll take this opportunity to mention, while we wait for calls, of course, the phone number is 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We'll answer any technical questions you may have.
Or by email.
Or by email.
geeks@geekspeak.org.
Didi, next week is your last week. We'll be talking next week about the program that you're about to go into, your master's degree at NYU, Interactive Telecommunications Program. The ITP encourages students to create new forms of communication through the exploration of social applications, physical computing, interactive games, multimedia art, sound, video, and much more, while focusing on user interaction. So, Didi, we'll be talking about that program, your program you'll be going into next week, and also MIT's program that's very similar. Do you have anything to mention about it now?
Sounds fun.
Are you excited about the program?
I'm getting a little nervous, but I'm hoping to have a lot of fun.
Now, you just finished your bachelor's in film and computer science.
Right.
Those hard? Easy? What do you feel?
I really appreciated having a double major, although I didn't get to dive too deeply into either. I did get my feet wet and get to dunk my head into both, and that was really exciting because whenever I was really bummed out on computer science, there was always film, and whenever film was getting down, there was always computer science, and despite what people think, they're actually really related. You can take concepts from almost anything where you're talking about theory and relating how people work with or communicate with and objects or each other, which computer science and film both work. They both work in sort of communication realms, and you can apply that to so much of your life, which I'm really grateful for.
Good. Okay. And can you tell me real quick about the program you'll be going into?
NYU takes in all sorts of people. There's the average age is actually 28, so I'll be on the young end. And they take people who have just got out of school, who have been out of school for years and who work as, you know, they take architects, they take engineers, they take computer scientists, they take painters, they take film.
So a wide spectrum of people.
Right, and they try to get them to work collaboratively over the course of 2 years to create new work that inspires communication between people.
Can you give me an example of one of the things that was made by a student?
Well, a lot of people talk about Daniel Rosen's wooden mirror, which was this large it was a
hexagon. Octagon.
It was a mirror.
Okay.
made out of wood, and there's little sections that are taken out. I forget how many there were, but they're about the size of your palm, little pieces of wood, and the mirror was, I think, like 6 feet tall.
So they just shined really clear so that they were reflective, or was it the mirror, the reflective aspect was some other way?
Well, they rotate along their horizontal axis, and light shines down on them, and so from your standing position, your viewing position a little bit away from the mirror, having them spin back and forth along their axis presents different lights and darks, and so you can create an image using these wooden
wooden blocks.
Yeah. Okay. And so there's a camera in the center, which is looking at you, and so the wooden mirror is reflecting your image
in wood. That's great. We're going to talk more about that program next week on Geek Speak. We're talking about where Dee Dee's going and why she's going there and what other parts of the program sound interesting next week. Thanks, Dee Dee. We have a call now from Jean in Watsonville. Jean, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I had a question on whether I'm trying to decide whether to upgrade to the new 10.3. I'm way back on 8.6.
Oh.
What kind of machine do you have?
I have a PowerBook laptop, the earlier kind, the black key one.
So it's a G3.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What do you think, Dee Dee? How much memory do you have in it? Do you know?
Oh, I added as much memory as
You could.
It would take, basically.
There are people running OS X on older PowerBook G3s down to Wall Street and Lombard. It could work for you. Panther is a little bit faster than Jaguar, a lot of people have reported, and you don't have to have the best video card to exploit some of its features, but a lot of the glitz goes away.
Dee Dee, would you recommend it?
I'd recommend trying it. If you could borrow it for a while, trying it to see how it would work on your machine.
How can Jean from Watsonville try it on her machine without and be able to roll back to 8.6 if she needs to? Can she do that?
Classic operating systems as well as OS X, they can coexist together. They allow you to boot one from the other. It's like having Windows 95 and Windows 2000 on the same drive.
So she can install it, and then if it doesn't work, she can just decide to boot from OS X.
As long as you have the hard drive space for it.
Yeah.
As long as there's space for it. So, Gene, you could give it a shot and see. Dee Dee, have you seen anybody run OS X on the black early G3s?
I've only read about it on the internet, and they're pretty hardcore people.
Gene, are you currently happy with the operating system you have?
With what?
With what you have as a computer?
It's okay for me now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at some point I'll get another one, but I'm not having problems with it for what I'm using it for.
In that case,
I was thinking of upgrading at all from 8.6 was because I wanted to start using iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that you need the latest operating system in order to...
Oh, for iTunes to get the music store.
You do need OS X.
OS X.
Or eventually Windows.
OS 10.2, actually, you need currently for iTunes Music Store.
So would it be better for me to just do 10.2 at this point? Because the other thing, I was a little bit skeptical of chart. I know a lot of times there's a lot of bugs in the new...
Yeah. Well, if you wanted to do it right now, you'd have to do to OS 10.2 because 10.3 is not actually out.
But then I'd have to pay for another one.
Yeah, you would have, so you might want to wait. I personally, if you're not having that much problems, that you all you really want is iTunes, you're probably going to have some trouble doing it, upgrading your machine to OS 10.3. Your machine's actually going to have some trouble. You're going to have to, I don't know.
Are you sure that Apple hasn't, typically when a company announces a new product, if you buy for software,
oh yeah,
if you buy that version that's out, you know, at that point, you should be able to then upgrade.
I wouldn't be surprised if I want to check into that. 3 months.
Oh, yeah, within a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
So they might give
you 10.2 now, but allow you to get 10.3 when it comes out.
Yeah, I'll give them a call, too, to see what they have to say.
And, Gene, if you decide to do it and have trouble or not, please let us know. I'd love to hear about it. Thanks, Gene, for the call.
Okay, bye.
We also have a call from Kelly, Carmel Valley. Kelly, welcome to Geek Speak. Now, first, Kelly, before I welcome you, actually, Kelly's also calling about Macintosh. I want to assure everyone that we can take Windows questions. We can take Linux questions. Sean's here with Windows, total expert. Miles is here with Linux and Unix expertise, or at least familiarity.
I don't think we couldn't take, like, Sun Spark questions.
We could take them, but we'd have to wait for somebody else to answer them.
Yeah.
But we can definitely take Kelly's question. Kelly, Carmel Valley. Kelly, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thanks, Lyle. Thanks, gang. This might be a little bit too Mac-centric for people, but give it a try and see what happens. I'm running a web server using WebStar on an upgraded 7500, Power Mac 7500. It was a G3 chip in it that has just been going forever, you know, and it's got OS 9 on it, 9.1, in fact. And, you know, when you get to this point... with technology that's kind of probably by most standards ancient, and even down-res of software,
mm-hmm.
You begin to say to yourself, well, is it a good idea to upgrade? And
is WebStar available for OS 10?
That's a good question. I believe it is. It's now been taken over by 4D, from what I understand, which is a gruesome thought, but nonetheless, there it is.
Does WebStar, I'm not real familiar with WebStar. Miles, are you familiar with WebStar?
Only in passing, only by name.
Does it have an application? Is it an application system? Miles? No. Gene? Are you just? I'm sorry, Kelly. Are you just running HTML files off this web server and images?
Well, actually not. Actually, I'm serving a database, FileMaker database, via a third program called Lasso.
Okay, Lasso, right?
Right. That then displays, of course, is the kind of window to display the database.
Right. Well, okay, first off, you don't really need to use WebStar for Lasso, and Lasso you could run on OS 10. So you could – the trick of your setup, your specific setup with FileMaker and stuff is that, of course, you need to run your FileMaker – do you have FileMaker Developer? What are you using for FileMaker?
FileMaker Unlimited.
FileMaker Unlimited, right. So are you running that on the same machine as the web server?
Yes.
Okay, so you'd have to get a new FileMaker Unlimited that could run on OS 10. It might be that your current, the copy that you have actually is installed, can be installed on either.
It actually is true,
okay,
yeah.
So then you're going to do that. Then you have a Lasso OS 10, and then you have to have some web server. Now you can use Apache, which is built onto OS 10,
mm-hmm.
as the web server with Lasso.
Yeah.
And you can do some searches online about this. The question is, are you looking to upgrade because you need some feature you currently can't get?
Well, that's the point. One would think that, you know, it'd be nice to have a server that was snappier than perhaps what it is right now, although it's running at 500 megahertz and G3, which is not, you know, it's not too ragged locally. But, you know, the question really has, since all of the, I run my business, this is on a business, by the way, I run most of my business on Macintoshes. And, you know, at our, in our production system, there, each workstation has a, a Macintosh, and it's not a kind of, how do you say, it's not an IT business. It is instead a production kind of situation. So the problem is that almost everything else is running OS X, while the web server is kind of lags in this regard.
Well, I would do this. Go ahead and go and research Lasso on OS X. You'll find a lot of support. Lasso is very widely used for FileMaker interaction. That's how you basically do FileMaker online, and people do it a lot. So I'd take a look at that. I think you'll find support on installing Lasso on OS X environment with Macintosh's built-in web server, which is really Apache.
Were you concerned about upgrading your hardware or just the...
No, I think the primary reason for doing so is just that it seems like at one point or another, then I'm not sure about this, but you know, support just simply goes away for certain things.
It does, that's true.
You know, and my thought is kind of looking for a year or two in the future and saying to myself, am I going to be in a squeeze? And is the pain like sooner or later, you know, from the standpoint of coding and reprogramming and all the rest?
Yeah.
Or maybe it's not. Maybe it is, perhaps, what I end up with is something that is, in typical Macintosh fashion, it just lights up, you know, when you throw the switch.
Right.
Which is what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, I think you'll have not much trouble getting a new machine with OS X running Lasso and FileMaker. I'm not sure about the current machine upgrading. I think it would work, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was not faster. And that's mostly because it's the same hardware and you're running more stuff on it. That said, you're going to be doing, well, there's a little more details regarding that. I just want to let you know, though, that Apple is pretty clear that they're not making new software for OS 9. FileMaker is a wholly owned subsidiary of Apple. So it could be only a matter of time before the next version of FileMaker is not available in OS 9.
Yep, got it. Okay, well, I sure appreciate your help. Thank you.
Kelly, thanks for the call.
Sure, bye-bye now.
We have another call about Macintoshes, but before I do that, I'm going to give out the phone numbers again so you can call in again about Windows or Linux. 476-2800 in the 831 area code, 476-2800, or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can email us. Are we checking email? Sean,
yes.
Are you checking email? Good. Geeks at geekspeak.org. Mark from Santa Cruz, welcome to Geekspeak.
Hello.
Hello, yes.
Yeah, I just had a very quick comment that you guys seemed a little bit uncertain as to whether or not OS X could be installed on a black PowerBook. I mean, it's no problem.
Are you running it?
I have a Pismo and 500 megahertz and 384 RAM.
I love the radio.
People might describe me as hardcore, but it, you know, really, 10 runs fine on the black.
And how much RAM did you have? I'm sorry?
184.
And it's no problem?
384.
384, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've been running it since 10 was out.
Okay, and you're happy with it? You're going to go to 10.3 when it comes out?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Mark, thank you very much for calling and helping us derive that solution.
And at least you should urge that woman to go to 9.22.
I'm sorry?
I would at least urge her to go to the last decent version of 9.
Yeah, 9.22 is definitely better than,
or whatever, yeah.
Better than 8.6, that's for
definitely,
sure.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, if she can upgrade all the way up to OS 10, might as well. It will save her from buying two operating systems.
Makes sense for it.
Well, I hope Gene is still listening from Watsonville. And, Mark, thank you very much for the call.
Can I have a quick question about FileMaker?
Please go for it.
Are there good resources for development on FileMaker?
New databases and such?
Yeah, just beginning to write, applications
in FileMaker?
Within FileMaker.
Well, last year in April, I went to the FileMaker. No, not in April. Oh, last year at some point, I went to the FileMaker Developer Conference. It was in Southern California. This year, it's in Arizona, I believe.
Right.
It's the FileMaker Developer Conference. It's a 5-day trip, and what I learned is there's a lot of people doing the same kind of thing in FileMaker, but the web resources aren't very good. I would definitely take a look at Advisor Magazine, FileMaker Advisor Magazine. That's a great magazine for FileMaker.
Right.
And other than that, you know, I saw a presentation from the webmaster, basically, of the FileMaker site, and he was showing off how cool their website was for searching features and questions and issues and forums and all those things that you need in a good development environment.
Uh-huh.
And I've used it since then and was not surprised, not impressed by the amount of data that's there. It's just, it's a little clunky to use.
Yeah.
But, you know, I definitely keep on doing a Google. You'll find, anytime you have a question in FileMaker, you can definitely find a Google answer. There's enough people out there that are doing it.
Okay.
But it's not a good central store of that information.
Okay.
Mark, if you'd like to email me questions, you're welcome to lyle@geekspeak.org. I do a bit of FileMac development.
Wonderful.
Thanks, okay. Mark, for the call.
Thanks,
Paul. Sean, let's talk real quick about Windows. We're not getting calls about it, but you look antsy. So what's new?
Oh, I'm fine.
You're
drinking
fine?
My coffee.
You recently found out a whole bunch of software about copying DVDs. Can you explain this to us?
Yeah. Well, a friend of mine was very curious about a DVD X copy, which is on all the store shelves at Fry's. And when you first walk in the door, pushing it like a drug. So he got a copy. And I brought my DVD recorder in, external
to
unit
work.
To work. Uh-huh. And we gave it a try. And, yeah, it was very easy. So basically, it doesn't copy the extra features, the menus, it just grabs the movie. And I'm not sure. Some discs have multiple versions of movies, widescreen, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure how you would select, how you would choose.
So this application, like normally when I take a DVD, and I take my player, there's a whole menu item. You can skip scenes. You can see special features,
well,
all that stuff.
After you make a copy of the movie. And what it wants to do is it wants to, even if you have a DVD reader and a burner, it wants to do everything through the burner.
So it caches the entire thing to your
hard drive.
It's
not like you could just put your movie in, a blank DVD in, click a button, go away for the night. Next morning, you've got a copy, whatever. No, you've actually got to be there to swap the discs out and hit a couple dialogue boxes. Although I would say it's very intuitive. It's very simple to do. And what you get is you put your copied movie into your DVD player if it supports that.
Okay.
A lot of DVD players can't play
copied media.
DVD-R. They can't read the DVD-R media. A little menu, a big menu comes up that says from 321 Studios that this is a copied video because supposedly under fair use, we all have the right to make copies of
our own stuff,
the stuff that we own, although it's not really a law. So I guess it's been challenged in court and doesn't really have a leg to stand on. But
Miles, can you address that a little bit?
Not a lawyer. This is an area where
it really comes down to how much the industry wants to pressure people.
Fair use opens up the use of copyrighted works for parody, for some educational purposes, and small sectors of personal use.
See, I think that's right.
Yeah,
but basically you see this menu and then it just goes right into the movie as if you're at a movie theater watching the movie.
That's what I understand.
And it's a perfect copy.
You take your off the shelf DVD, and lots of times it can fit a DVD off the shelf can actually take a widescreen version and a narrow version, full screen version, and of course commentary tracks and multiple language tracks and subtitles, all this information, all this data, and it fits onto a 14 gig disk. That's what a DVD can actually go up to. But the DVD-Rs that we currently have and can actually write are 4.7 gigs. So how do you fit 14 gigs on the 4.7 gigs?
It's some kind of magic because they guarantee they can fit any movie onto a DVD. So they're doing something in the background compression-wise.
And I guess one of the things they're doing is they're dropping all the other stuff. They do one copy.
They drop everything else.
They don't drop. You don't have any special features.
Now, the way the DVDs get away with it now is there's a lot of them are dual layer. So there's actually.
But not the DVD-Rs.
You can tell a dual layer disc from a normal disc. Normal discs are silver. If you look at the bottom of it, dual layers are always gold.
An issue with DVDs is the head of the MPAA had stated that there's no reason to back up DVDs. You get a DVD and it lasts forever, but there have been issues that people are bringing up of what's called DVD rot, finding that DVDs are simply failing, not because of overuse or scratches, but just because the technology is such that the data doesn't last forever.
So you want to make a copy of it because it's not going to last forever.
Yeah, so there's a whole big push between some people saying, oh, but DVDs, they last forever. There's no reason anybody should have to copy it. Only those evil pirates would want to copy them, but then they're finding DVDs, are actually failing on their own.
But I got to say that a DVD is not just the movie. A DVD is the entire experience of the DVD.
Yeah,
so it's not really a copy of the DVD. It's a copy of the movie that's on the DVD.
It's just the movie.
We have Paul from Aptos. Paul, welcome to Geek Speak.
Yes, hello. Actually, I was just... The tail end of that reminds me of laser rot. If you remember, laser discs had the same problem. The adhesive they used to smash the layers together would give up, and
the disc would slowly start falling apart. Yeah.
All the bits would go away. Yeah. My question is Linux. I am looking to to activate the automatic power management daemon, but I'm running a symmetric multiprocessor kernel. So, it, you know,
yeah.
You... am I outside of the Linux box?
Different experiences. There are some people who have gotten it to work, but there are a whole lot of people that have come across what I think you may have come across, which is instability or simply saying, oh, it's not supported. It simply turns off when you have an SMP kernel.
Okay,
right.
Hang on just a second. I want to clarify for everybody. I have no idea what they're talking about.
Okay.
Go on, Miles.
SMP, symmetric multiprocessing. It means you have more than one CPU. APM, advanced power management, these are things to either... Shut the hard drive down, or you know, turn the computer off just as a soft power off, and suspend and the like. And unfortunately, when you have multiple CPUs, there are a lot more. There's more than one brain to say what's going on at any one time, and you end up with contention issues with hardware.
So this power management software doesn't work with multiple processors. It's just unstable.
It's not finalized. It's not as stable as it as the rest of Linux usually is.
Well, thank you, Paul, for the call. We've run
okay.
out of time. Paul from
yeah.
Aptos. Great question. I love it when someone calls and I have no idea what they're talking about. I love it. Thanks, Miles, for being here to help with that. This
no,
program
didn't
is
su- really help, but yeah.
Okay. You impressed me. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. The geeks this morning were Sean Cleveland, Dee Dee Hubbard, and Miles Elam. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Thank you for participating on Geek Speak today.
Thank you. I mean, if we can't help solve problems, at least we can sit here and, you know, feel good for you, you know, feel bad for you.
To those that called in, thank you very much for making Geek Speak what it is. Without your input, it would just be us geeking out. Who wants to listen to that? Our very own geek, Dee Dee Hubbard, is about to embark on a master's degree at NYU. Next week, we'll talk about the interactive telecommunications program she will be participating in. The ITP encourages students to create new forms of communication through the exploration of social applications, physical computing, interactive games, multimedia art, sound, video, and much more, while focusing on user interaction. Farewell to Dee Dee next week on GeekSpeak. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Ardo, or on the web at kusp.org. I'm Lyle Troxell, and this is Geek Speak. Stay tuned now for Fine Print.